This is Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith.
You know the globalized food supply is fragile. Experts find food riots are possible even in the United Kingdom as climate change ramps up. From Cambridge, Alla Jones outlines how food stress boils over. Around the world, crops may not be planted or harvested because it's too hot to work outside. From Columbia University, Connor Dunn-Diaz reports. Plus, selections by Dr. Vanessa Andreotti on final care for an age on life support. Her book, Hospicing Modernity. I'm Alex Smith. Welcome to Radio EcoShock. Dozens of experts say food riots could erupt in the UK within the next 50 years and maybe in the next 10. Really? Is that possible? As in many countries, the population was shocked at the fragility of food in the early 2020 COVID shutdowns. Food prices are still very high, and 2023 bad weather damaged UK crops. We all need to know about food security as the climate shifts. Dr. Alla Jones is a member of the Science Advisory Group for the UK Global Food Security Programme as director of the Global Sustainability Institute at Anglia Ruskin University. Jones is lead author of a big new expert survey on UK food. In October, they published Scoping Potential Routes to UK Civil Unrest via the Food System. From Cambridge, Alla Jones, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
Is a real food crisis bringing rioters out on the streets? It hasn't happened for over 100 years. And you advised the UK government on food security. You were part of the UK-US Task Force on Extreme Weather and Global Food Resilience. Why your continuing concern?
I think what we've seen around the world is more tension and more problems within the food system. So as you said in the introduction, food prices are at an all-time high. And also the use of things like food banks, where people are reliant on donations for food in the UK, is at an all-time high. So the pressure in the food system is really high. And while we haven't seen riots of really large scale within the UK for many decades, we have seen small-scale riots and protests around availability of food, both in the UK but also across Europe. So really the question is, what are the things that will trigger people going out and protesting, and how those protests become riots, and what we can do to try and alleviate that pressure so that people feel secure in their access to food going forward?
And your analysis finds civil unrest could develop even if the country doesn't actually run out of food. What is another possible cause?
So even if we don't run out of food, there's two different causes there. One is distribution and the other is price. So even if we've got enough food, if it's unaffordable for the majority of people, then obviously they can't access it. Or if we have a distribution problem, whether that's problems with transport or logistics in moving food around the country, then it's not necessary that the whole country will experience protests or disturbances around access to food, but it could be pockets that appear where that distribution has not been possible.
The new paper points to, quote, the rise in social media and sensationalist journalism, and with the public expectation that one should be able to buy anything, more or less at the same price, at any time of year. Talk to us about the fragility of public expectations in the developed world.
What we've seen is that people now do expect the system to be able to provide what they need when they need it. And also that it should be affordable. We've seen, globalization has provided us with supply chains that can provide any fruit or vegetable at any time of the year. And people have got used to that and used to being able to buy fruit and veg at times of the year where you couldn't grow them domestically. So with that expectation becomes additional fragility. So as soon as, and we saw this during COVID, and within the UK as well, when the UK left the European Union, we saw disruptions to supply chains. And there was a lot of tension within the consumer groups about, just some products not being available, whether that was tomatoes or lettuce. It didn't spill over to riots, but you could see the tension within the system rise because some supply chains stopped working. And when it's food in particular, those tensions can rise quite rapidly. And we've certainly seen it in many countries around the world where access to particular sorts of food can lead to rioting and can lead to protest very rapidly.
As we speak, wet weather damaged local UK vegetables, straining some supermarket staples for the holiday season. But can't we always import more if climate instability hits?
What we've been seeing, especially in the UK, is this assumption that we can always import, that the international markets will be able to help us withstand any local and domestic shocks. And certainly for the UK, we import approximately half our food all the time. So we're very reliant on international markets. The challenges that we're going to face going forward is around disruptions to those supply chains, either because we change trade agreements, and we saw that with the European Union in the UK, or because you've got increasing impacts of things like climate change around the world, where large breadbaskets, so these are areas that grow a lot of our food, for example in the US or in Ukraine and Russia or in China and across Europe, where they get disrupted, and we have seen losses of 10% of global food, global wheat or global rice in a given year. Sometimes we have the stocks to be able to withstand those sorts of shocks, but you can imagine quite easily at the sort of perfect storm of losing wheat harvests in the US due to food and floods or droughts, coupled with extreme rainfall in the UK, meaning that international prices are really high. So up until this point, we've been able to outbid poorer countries or stabilize our supply chains, but we can't always rely on being able to outbid everybody on international markets.
Well, so in an emergency, could the country feed itself as it tried to do in World War II?
So what happened in World War II was a dramatic change in the way we used our landscape. We were also a much smaller population and much less reliant on imports. So currently, the 50% reliance on imports, there is the possibility of changing what we eat, so we would have to be much less reliant on meat, so that the per calorie output from our land was much higher, so that we're not feeding food to animals and then creating that supply chain. So yes, the UK could probably be self-sufficient, although there's lots of research going on to see if how true that is, but our diets would have to be vastly different from what they are today. And also what we eat and when we eat it would need to be very different. So it's also, of course, it would be very seasonal. So the big question is, how quickly could we change everything? It wouldn't be overnight. People always struggled to change diets over many years. So if suddenly we had to be self-sufficient, then there probably would be a lot of tension in the system, and certainly tension within society and across communities, and resistance to that, the scale of change that would be needed.
What were the questions your new paper, with 56 co-authors, asked?
So what we asked was very general questions around what do we think the risks are in the food system? How do we see some of these risks playing out, over what sort of time scale? And this was general risks across the whole food system. So we covered things like the rise of social media, information, access to knowledge that people have. What does that do in terms of tension within the food system, through to climate change, extreme weather, loss of biodiversity, pollinators, bees, things that are really important, increasing prices into farms, transport, as well as more extreme impacts like extreme space weather. So that disrupting telecommunications, disrupting logistics. So we did ask these experts to try and list as many risks as they could and then put their best estimate at likelihood of these sorts of events happening over a 10 or 50-year time frame.
And what did experts conclude about the chances of food riots in the UK within the next 50 years or even the next 10?
So the vast majority of experts thought over the next 50 years that riots were certainly possible in the UK, and they thought that the drivers for that, the main ones, would be climate change or impacts of climate change, although there are a number of different cascading risks. So climate change impacting some physical loss, but then also impacting transport and impacting societies in different ways. So that kind of multiple risks coming together over the next 50 years could make accessibility in the UK a problem, and accessibility then leading into some form of riot. Over the shorter period of time, then there was much less consensus. It certainly wasn't the majority. It was a minority of people thought that we could still see some form of protest in the UK, mostly down to accessibility. So that's more about distribution than it is about overall access and availability. But that, you know, that distribution, we could certainly see pockets, especially in areas where there is more poverty in the UK and more people reliant on food banks and donations currently, then a distribution challenge across that kind of supply chain in those regions could lead to some sort of riot or protest.
Unlike the so-called Cardiff Ellie bread riots in 1991, which began really as a business dispute, what is the threshold your team established as a real riot?
So we didn't actually define a threshold. What we did try and say is this is the scale of riot that we wanted people to think about when they were looking at the likelihood of it happening. So the sort of riots that we had were the London riots, which were more around race and the police in the last decade. So we have seen London riots and people going out in the streets, committing violence, looting shops. They're very small pockets. So we try to ask people to imagine what would create that, but on a much larger scale. So not the level on a larger scale, but just more distributed across the UK. So certainly those sorts of race riot type levels that we have seen, but as a result of some sort of crisis in the food system and happening in more than just those localized areas.
Well, in the scenario in the paper, you talk about 30,000 people injured. What do you mean by injured?
So we used the definition that was used in the London riots, and this is how police categorize the impact of the riots. So injuries, as noted by the police, could be anything from, you know, people getting injured because of broken glass, ending up in fights. They could be hospitalized, but a lot of those are fairly minor injuries, but some can be fairly major injuries. In separate research, we have been looking at, you know, the scale of injury and whether, when you've looked at food riots around the world in the past, some of these protests and riots, especially around North Africa and the Middle East, they lead to death of protesters because of extreme responses by the authorities, or the riots become much larger. And we saw that in the Arab Spring, which then led to governments being toppled. So that kind of threshold is easier to quantify, one person dying. But the definition we used around injuries for this scenario was more around how police would categorize an injury. So has actual bodily harm happened? Would someone be arrested for that? The scale of that is quite wide.
If people think food will come within a few days, that is different from a dread of a longer period. Is the response recovery time a factor in whether riots happen? What do you think?
I think that's absolutely true. We didn't ask about response recovery times and how long that would need to be before the protest started to happen. But certainly, if you look at the UK food system and the resilience of it and supply chains, we often say that everyone's 7 days away from food running out. So our supply chains are incredibly efficient and just in time. And a lot of the UK food distribution is on the back of lorries rather than in storage. So it's constantly in movement. So when we look at recovery timescales, we've also got to look at how efficient the system is and how recovery would happen. And that's why I think, you know, it's when the supply chain breaks down, you've got a 3 to 7 day period where the local supply would run out. And how quickly you can then recover means that you've got an additional period of time on that. How people perceive it, and this is where we, you know, talk about the rise of social media and the press and how it's talked about. So if it's talked about in a measured way, there's been a supply chain problem, but people are working on it, and supply should be back up in 3 to 5 days, so don't panic. that would help alleviate some of the problems. But if the social media and the newspapers report it as, you know, shock photos of no food on shelves in certain supermarkets, people go out, panic buy, there's even less food then in the system, and that can speed up the problem, and therefore that response time needs to be even shorter. So as soon as people see no food in the shops, then protests can happen really quickly. So that kind of response time depends on how people respond to the initial shock. If shops are empty for 2-3 days, people get very worried very quickly.
Did any of the expert respondents cite hacking, artificial intelligence, or terrorism as a threat to food?
Yeah, so both AI and terrorism were factors linked into some of those risks, as well as, you know, things like food health issues, so outbreaks of different sorts of avian flu in birds or swine flu, so that sort of disease factors within the food system as well could be a risk, but in particular around AI in logistics and transport and the whole food system and sales, then that's a particular threat, as is direct terrorism, both in terms of physical risks to supply chains and especially global supply chains. So there are particular risk points in the global supply chain, but also through cyber terrorism, taking down transport logistics, that's also a risk to the food system.
Check out the Radio EcoShock website. We're at ecoshock.org.
You are tuned to Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex Smith. Our guest is Dr. Alan Jones, director of the Global Sustainability Institute in Cambridge. He led a study into possible food riots in the United Kingdom as food security breaks down. There are scenarios where the same food breakdowns may not cause mass riots. Consider food shortages during a deadly pandemic or fear of bombardment, something like that. Are food riots inevitable at some point as people starve?
They're not inevitable. And what I think the reason to do this sort of research to understand where the risks come from is how to make them much less likely. When people feel that they are all working together and feel the same risk together, actually protests are much less likely. So if there's a real global threat to food systems, for example, during bombardments in the Second World War, the community tries to support itself to respond. They don't go out and protest because they don't think someone's withholding food or the system isn't working properly. If people think the system is working properly and trying to protect them, but has failed for some reason, it's outside of the system's control, they're much more likely to collaborate and work together. So part of this work isn't to say, you know, riots are inevitable. It's more, let's get the system to respond so people can see that we're working really hard to make this risk much lower, so that if things do happen, and we certainly anticipate climate change impacts to be quite significant over the next 10, 20 years, then people don't think that the system is failing them. They feel as protected as they possibly can, and then they will collaborate, and the outcomes will be much better.
Do you think riots are always bad, always leading to a more broken society, or could riots be cathartic, like revolution needed for new circumstances?
Very interesting question. I think ideally you get a change in the way the system works without the need for a riot. However, some riots and certainly protests in the past have led to positive change. And it's very unfortunate, and we don't want to see people injuring themselves or being injured during those protests to create change. But you know, the suffragettes or anti-slavery movements, these things have happened because people went out on the street and said, we want to see a systems change. I hope it doesn't come to the point where the only way we can get changes in the food system is through protest.
Alan Jones, you've been working on UK food security for many years. Is the government of the people getting any closer to national food readiness for emergencies?
So I think in the UK, not really. We've seen an increasing reliance on international markets and international supply chains. There has been some work around food security, and we've seen reports on food systems and the future of food being commissioned by the UK government, and especially looking at things like diet changes and what we need out of food as well as strategies around how we ensure domestic production is protected, so that we do have some form of domestic production. What we haven't seen is that being joined up into a proper food security strategy looking forward.
This new work asks not just academics, but experts in business and the nonprofit sector. Did you find agreement that climate change is a major factor in food insecurity and how it develops?
Yeah, so from all the experts, it was from a wide range of businesses, government, academics, third sectors, charity sectors, and climate change was by far the biggest factor in creating increased risk in the food system going forward. So there was no disagreement about climate change. It was usually ranked at number one. The differences came in exactly how that would be impacting and over what time scales.
And climate scientists talk of tipping points, although many now prefer thresholds. Do we know what the thresholds and trigger points for populations fearing for their food supply to become riots?
Not really. There is an increasing amount of work trying to understand the food system and its reliance on, in particular, the prevailing weather. So there's lots of work, especially around Europe, looking at North Atlantic currents and what that would do if that slowed down dramatically, what that would do to our prevailing weather system. There are particular local tipping points or thresholds for certain crops in some countries, and they're quite well known and well studied. So if you're growing cocoa in a certain country and the temperature is changing and weather patterns are changing, then it may not be possible to grow cocoa in that particular country. You need to look at alternative crops, but then that means you have to look at the different supply chains, different places to sell it. You need to create different markets. So that all takes time. And what we're seeing is that it's taking longer to change the whole supply chain system and market system than climate change is giving us. So there are sort of thresholds both in the social system around food systems, and there are thresholds in the physical system, which means crops are moving further north and some crops are no longer viable in some countries. The big question is, globally, what is there? Is there a threshold in food systems? You know, at what point do extreme weather events become so commonplace that the resilience of the whole system needs to be thought of in a different way?
In this century, there have been food riots in Bangladesh and mostly in North Africa. The 2022 crisis in Sri Lanka was partly due to food and energy shortages, plus wild inflation. But again, there hasn't been a food riot in recent years in the UK, so the population has no experience. I wonder, does that make it harder to predict what comes next?
It does make it harder to predict what comes next. I think there's interesting conversations around, you know, because we haven't seen food riots in the UK recently, does that mean we'll never see them? Is it less likely that there will be a food riot? We have seen other sorts of riots in the UK, riots around racial discrimination or things of those sorts. So the question is really, what would the trigger point be for a food-related riot in the UK? We haven't seen it yet. But a lot of the factors that we've seen in other countries, insecurity around food, long-term insecurity around food, are present in the UK. And in countries that are very close, like France or Spain, we have seen certainly large-scale food protests for a variety of different reasons and a variety of different political factors that go into that. So while we say we haven't seen them in the UK, we've seen them in countries that are very similar. So it may just be a question of time.
On this show, I covered studies showing multiple crop failures in key bread baskets are possible as climate destabilization continues. Could crop failures in faraway places lead to food riots where you live? And I wonder what the delay time might be.
They certainly could. We've also looked at bread basket failures in certain geographies, and especially where they're major contributors to global food prices. So, you know, extreme weather in the US could take out the international wheat market. And certainly in the past, where around 2007, prior to the Arab Spring and the food riots that we saw across North Africa, there was a huge increase in international food prices. So more than trebling of wheat prices, rice prices, and soybean and corn, maize. So that kind of increase, a trebling of international food prices of the raw ingredients, they don't translate into trebling of bread prices, but where you're directly exposed to that international price, so in developing countries, your expectation of availability and access to food dramatically drops, and so you're much quicker to go out and protest. For somewhere like the UK, where there is a delay in the system through the prices, because you don't see a trebling in the price of a loaf of bread or fruit and vegetables, because there's a lot of marketing costs and supply chain costs that are added onto it, which makes it more of the bulk of the price. The delay can be longer than if you're directly exposed. So it's, you know, but that international price, it depends how quickly markets respond. And then what happens to the food on the international market. So far the UK has been able to buy it on international markets, but if there was a major bread basket failure and food prices went up by a factor of 3 or 5 again, and then if that meant the UK and other countries could outbid the UK on the international markets, then you'd expect to see some accessibility issues in the UK quite quickly, but it certainly wouldn't be within days. It would be within a season.
If you were tasked with writing a food security primer for the UK population at large, any ideas or tips for our listeners where you would start?
I think the most important thing really is that it is a system problem. So in terms of food security for the population at large, it's not really about going out and stockpiling and trying to protect our own. It's about talking to the community, talking to the people in authority, whether those are the local politicians within local councils, through to the national government, to say, you know, what are you doing about food security? Can you tell me how you're thinking about how the UK would withstand these future shocks, which are expected, which are within the system, and being open to change. One of the easiest ways of changing pressure on the food system is changing diet. Eating less meat takes some pressure out of the food system. But we need to see this more system change happening before we really expect individuals to be able to save the system by themselves.
From the Global Sustainability Institute at Cambridge, we've been speaking with Director Alan Jones. He led the paper Scoping Potential Routes to UK Civil Unrest via the Food System, Results of a Structured Expert Elicitation. Find links and more discussion in my show blog at ecoshock.org, published Wednesdays, and that's Thursday in Europe. I'm Alex Smith reporting.
You're listening to EcoShock Radio for the world.
I'm Alex Smith. Get it all at our website, ecoshock.org.
This is Radio EcoShock with your host, Alex Smith.
Do you feel nervous about the food supply in coming years as the climate goes extreme? Here is a new wrinkle. The weak link in the global food chain that stretches to your door may be human. Agricultural workers face deadly levels of heat and humidity right when they need to plant or harvest crops that feed billions of people. To find the risks in a warming world, a Columbia University undergraduate student teamed up with scientists at the Lamont Doherty Earth Observatory. They just published the paper, Increased Extreme Humid Heat Hazard Faced by Agricultural Workers. We reached the lead author, Connor Dunn-Diaz. Connor, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Thank you so much, Alec. It's a pleasure to be here.
Most of our listeners buy their food at a grocery store. Why should we worry about conditions for agricultural workers as climate change ramps up?
Well, especially nowadays, the global food system is very connected. We have globalized logistics systems that are transferring food from thousands and thousands of miles away. So when we think about a warming world, we have to think about all of these different links in the supply chain and how are the distribution of food, and especially the impact of heat on the laborers, the crop workers who are harvesting this food, is impacting each one of those links in the supply chain.
And the key concept for our survival in extreme heat is the wet bulb temperature. It's not easy.